Alrighty, well, hello there. This is Jonathan Trotter, and welcome to the Digging in the Dirt podcast. I'm so grateful for you checking this out and spending some time with me. I'm very excited to actually go through the book, Digging in the Dirt, to just sort of read through it. And also, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to have a bit of a conversation with you all, where you guys can submit thoughts or comments or questions about missions, about digging in the dirt, about life in the mud, about marriage. And I look forward to sharing some of the stuff that often comes up and that often gets discussed in the counseling room. And so, again, just thank you so much for spending the time here. Today, episode one, our inaugural episode, we'll be reading the back cover of the book, the special thanks section, the preface, and then we'll just dive into chapter one, which is the 10 things that flying taught me about missions. And just a note, you know, as I read some of it, especially the back cover, I'm going to read it as is. So it'll be a bit of a second person or third person. I don't know. My wife's the editor. But occasionally I will say pause because I want to add some commentary and I want to try to make it as clear as possible when we're getting off of the book and I'm just talking with you all. So I'll try to make it clear and I'll say pause and then add my thoughts or commentary or background information to the chapter or what was going on in my life when I was writing it. But then when we get back to the book, I'll probably try to say something like, and now let's go back to the book and make it real clear. Okay. Like I said, we're very much looking forward to responding to thoughts and questions that you all have. You can send those to me through Facebook or Instagram or email or through a Google form that will be linked to in the show notes. Okay, so been thinking about this for a long time. I'm very excited to just dive in. So here is the back cover of Digging in the Dirt. Welcome to ground level, to the dirt and the mess. We like the mountaintops and the sunshine. We like green grass under a clear blue sky. We like victory and breakthrough and answered prayers. But sometimes it rains, the shadows deepen, and life turns muddy. Sometimes God seems quiet. What then? What happens when depression descends or anxiety hangs like a sword overhead? What happens when loneliness suffocates, the thief steals more than stuff, and you get blood on your shoes? In Digging in the Dirt, Jonathan Trotter delves into the disasters, the darkness, and the deluge, and he offers comfort, presence, and a gentle invitation to hope. With humor and prose, with poetry and top 10 lists, Jonathan welcomes us to the dirt, to the places where we actually live. He invites us to boldly see life as it is, with eyes wide open, and reminds us that even when the digging is scary, we are never alone. To the ones who are dealing with devastation and distress, welcome. To the ones who need to uproot, to pull out, to clear ground, welcome. To the ones who seek desperately to plant seeds of grace and hope in once barren soil, welcome. To the missionary abroad and the believer at home, welcome. Receive the invitation and join with Jonathan here at ground level together. Come, dig in the dirt. Pause. Again, I am just so thankful that you have tuned in here to check out Digging in the Dirt. You know, this book was written over many years' time, and many of these chapters were written through tears, coffee shops, spanning the globe, really. So it's such a privilege to share these words with you here today and in this podcast. And I dearly, dearly hope that these words will be a blessing and an encouragement at times, maybe a balm at times, maybe a challenge at times. Okay, let's go to the special thanks section. This is page one of the book, Special Thanks. It's been said that counseling changes the counselor too. It's true. Indeed, I don't think it would be possible to sit in these types of spaces, witness the courage of clients, and remain the same. Their stories have impacted me, and their tears have broken me. They have opened my eyes. I am thankful for what they have taught me. After his journey through hell, Dante's poet says, quote, "Thence we came forth to re-behold the stars," unquote. And while I hope to God that I've helped clients to see again the open sky, I know with certainty that they have helped me, and I am grateful. Their dark nights of the soul often break at dawn, and it has been my greatest privilege to sit on the edge of the cliff with them, sometimes in silence, awaiting the sure sunrise. Looking East, Jonathan. Preface. Hello and welcome. I'm Jonathan, and it's such a pleasure to meet you. Pause. It seems a little weird to read it like this, but I'm just going to go for it because I care about you guys. I care about sitting with people in pain and watching them heal and go. So we're just going for it. So let me start the preface again. Back to the book. Hello and welcome. I'm Jonathan, and it's such a pleasure to meet you. I look forward to journeying with you through these pages. Together, we'll delve into the dirt of life and relationships, of sorrows, pain, and loss. Maybe we'll plant some things, too. Perhaps along the way, we'll see small, green stalks of life and hope begin to poke through, watered with the tears of the journey. Digging like this can be messy, but it can be good, too. These musings will meander from the hot dirt of Cambodia to the sticky mud of American politics. Some of these musings are inspired by international ministry life, missionary life. Some of them are firmly rooted in an American context. But whether you're American or not, whether you're a missionary or not, I hope that you find them all a blessing, an encouragement, and perhaps sometimes a challenge. I wrote them for you, and I share them with you with my whole heart. Start reading Digging in the Dirt wherever you'd like, and feel free to skip ahead or go backwards. Are you a cross-cultural missionary? Start there if you want. Are you interested in developing emotional intelligence, or are you exploring whether or not Christians are allowed to have feelings? Consider starting in the emotions section. Are you reeling from recent life events that have left you feeling like you're choking on the mud and muck? First of all, I'm so sorry. Second, breathe a slow, deep breath, look over the table of contents, and start wherever you need to start. Wherever you are, and whatever your story, welcome to ground level, to the dirt. It is here that the real work happens, the good, hard, sweet, healing work. It is my deepest hope that here, among these musings, you may find grace, peace, and a hope that just might be strong enough to crack through the crust. All for one, Jonathan Trotter. All right, pausing, flipping the page here. We're going to start in the mission section. And I debated whether to read different parts of the book out of order or just to start in the mission section and go on. And I think I'm just going to start at the beginning and go from there. I will note, however, that about a third of the book is kind of explicitly missions. The second part and the third part are dealing with emotions and then life in the mud. So if you have a physical copy of the book, I really just want to reiterate that it is totally okay to jump around. But in this podcast, we will start at the beginning and we'll just kind of go straight through. Okay, back to the book. This is the first chapter called 10 Things Flying Taught Me About Missions. I love flying. It just doesn't get old for me. I've jumped the Pacific a bunch. I've skipped over the Atlantic a few times. I have my own license to fly small aircraft. But still, every time I fly, I feel like a little kid whose milk got spiked with espresso. Sometimes I'm afraid the other passengers are thinking, "Oh, for crying out loud, this guy does not get out much." I fight my kids for the window seat. I revel in the sensation of takeoff, the joy of punching through oppressive clouds to the open sky above. When we hit turbulence, I say a silent yee-haw. This chapter is my excuse to talk about aviation. Here's what flying has taught me about missions. Number one, pre-flight inspections are a good idea. You don't have to do a pre-flight inspection. You don't have to make sure the navigational instruments work. You don't have to make sure the tail is still there. If you're the pilot, you could just get in, start it up, and go. And you might be fine, but you might not. In missions, it's best to get some pre-field training, but you don't have to. You might be fine without it, and you might have a wonderful time. Or you might miss the bird's nest in the engine that'll catch fire in a wee bit, or the water that's in the gas tank, or the rudder that doesn't work. Pre-flight inspections save lives. So does pre-field training. Of course, even perfectly performed pre-flight inspections cannot erase all risk. Things might still go south, and an unforeseen mishap might still occur. Even so, there's a reason most pilots do a pre-flight inspection, and most organizations encourage pre-field training. Note, if you're in Southeast Asia, the bird's nest might not be in the engine, it might be in the free canned beverage from the gas station. I was not expecting that. Pause. Literally got a free drink at a gas station after filling up the van, and it said bird's nest in it, and it had some Vietnamese writing on it. And I was like, sure, I'll try that. And I did not expect the chunks that were going to come out of this canned beverage that turned out later to be some sort of fake gelatinous thing that was like to mimic bird's nest, which is a delicacy in the region, apparently. So you can look that up if you'd like. All right. Back to the book. Number two, communication matters. In most small airports in America, radio communication is not required. That is, you don't have to talk with anyone on the radio. You don't even have to have a radio in the plane. But radio communication is strongly recommended. Most pilots self-report their location and their intention, especially when operating close to an airport. They might say something like, Cessna 63279er, 6 miles east of the airport at 2,500 feet, inbound for landing on runway 18. Planning to enter a left downwind. It's really cool how this works because if everyone self-reports, all the pilots in the vicinity have a general idea of who's where and what they're planning to do. Not talking is scary. One day, I was in the pattern with several other aircraft, and we all knew where the other planes were when a new plane cut right in front of me preparing to land. He hadn't communicated anything, and although he wasn't breaking any rules, he wasn't making anything safer. Nor was he making any friends. In missions, it's great when folks talk to each other. If no one else is there, fine, do your own thing. But still, flying solo without at least a few people aware of what you're up to is dangerous. Not to mix analogies or anything, but you might think you are a lone wolf taking care of yourself and your ministry, when in reality, you might just be a lone wildebeest, separated from the herd, ready to provide a lion his lunch. If there are other workers on the field already, talk with them. Where are they? What are they doing? What's working? What's not? You're probably not the only person in the sky, so don't act like it. Communicate with people, and remember that failing to communicate endangers everyone. Number three, one-uppers happen. If you fly a lot, you've got travel stories, great and funny and crazy stories. Like that one time when all your flights were on time, no one threw up, and everyone arrived fully rested and smiling. Right. Be careful, though. It's hard to tell a nightmare travel story without someone needing to one-up it with a story of their own. Do I really have to explain how this is like missions? Yeah, I didn't think so. Do yourself a favor and look up the 4-minute clip by comedian Brian Regan about his social fantasy during his special, I Walked on the Moon. The phrases me monster, lunar rover, and two wisdom tooth tail have found their way into our family vernacular. This sketch is part of our family culture now. Perhaps it could become part of yours too. Number four, landing is one of the most dangerous parts of flying. Taking off requires little skill. Basically, you just point the plane in the right direction and push go. Landing, on the other hand, is a bit trickier. There's a lot more stuff that can go sideways. Landing safely requires planning, careful implementation, and a soft touch. It's sort of like landing on the field and then landing back home. Both landings carry certain risks and should be approached and planned for with care. Soft landings are the best, so find kind and good-hearted people. Hang out with them. Cry with them. And when you see the next plane coming in for a landing, whether abroad or in your passport country, do whatever you can to provide a soft landing for others. Number 5. Landing at a place is very different than flying over it. I've flown over a lot of countries that I've never been to. I was in their airspace, but I wasn't really there. It's different, you know. From way up high, the Rocky Mountains aren't all that majestic. The Grand Canyon's not that big. Siberia's not too cold. And the Pacific Ocean is pretty manageable. But stop and stay a while and things will shift. Short-term workers need to remember this. Passing through a nation, tasting their foods, and hugging their kids is not the same as staying. I'm not saying it doesn't have value, but short-termers must remember that being in a place for a week or even a month is sort of like performing a low-altitude flyover. You can take some cool pictures, but you can't really understand what it's like to live there. That being said, long-termers can benefit from the unique vantage point of our shorter-term brothers and sisters. Long-termers can get bogged down in minutiae and forget to come up for air from time to time. Hanging out with short-termers can reinvigorate and re-inspire and remind. I guess the main thing I'm saying is this: be aware of your altitude. If you're just flying over, know what it is that you don't know, and be humble enough to ask questions. If you've been somewhere a long time, ask the short-termers to describe what things look like from their vantage point. Ask them about where they came from and where they're going. The relationship can and should be very symbiotic. Number 6, most, but not all, obstacles are on the map. So look at it. Radio towers, mountains, restricted airspace, etc. They are all on the map. Pay attention. Listen to other people. Missionaries, learn the lay of the land. Learn from the old people, nationals and internationals alike. They have experience that you need, and they've probably paid dearly for it. Remember, nothing is new under the sun. Most experienced people are happy to share their thoughts and opinions with interested parties and to point out obstacles and hazards. No one likes to see a plane or a missionary crash and burn. Number 7. Number 7. Don't judge another passenger's anxiety. On the same flight, excited travelers who've planned for and dreamed of the trip for years may be sitting right next to people who are absolutely dreading what awaits them on the tarmac. One traveler may be starting a grand adventure, while another is dealing with tremendous loss and numerous endings. A traveler's anxiety isn't necessarily correlated to the smoothness of the flight. Don't judge. You don't know the stories. In missions, one person might really struggle with something that another person finds perfectly sublime. What stresses one might excite another. Be careful in the judging, because you just don't know their story. Stories are funky things, bleeding through the pages of a life. When you see a person stressed or anxious, give them the benefit of the doubt. You don't know what they left behind, and you don't know what's in store for them upon arrival. Often, neither do they. So be kind. Number 8. The toilets are different. And they sometimes require, skill. And planning, especially with small children. Number 9. You don't always get to choose your travel buddies. Sometimes you get to choose whom you sit next to and what they smell like. Other times, not so much. If you can't change it, just be glad you packed earplugs and smelling salts and sedatives. Sometimes you can choose where you sit and whom you sit next to. If that's the case, be bold. Choose. Sometimes things change en route and you may need to ask to move seats. If you need to and you can, do it. There is nothing noble or especially holy about staying in a difficult situation that isn't necessary. Pause. Excuse me. I will mention the book called Necessary Endings here by Henry Cloud, I believe. fantastic book that was very, very helpful for us in our time overseas, Necessary Endings. All right, back to the book. Number 10, sometimes you lose stuff. While it's true that you gain things by flying, you also lose stuff, like luggage or your temper or your ability to answer simple questions such as what day is it or what country am I in? Flying messes with your circadian rhythm, and if you're blessed to have other forms of rhythm, flying will mess with those too. You lose all sorts of stuff when you fly. Some of the stuff you get back, but some of it stays lost forever, just like in missions. Maybe you lose innocence, or optimism, or the belief that this will be easy. You might show up thinking that all foreign workers are pretty much perfect Christians, as if William Carey and Elizabeth Elliot had a bunch of children and named them all missionary. That assumption will be quickly destroyed. Most likely, you'll lose a bit of ignorance, forever changing how you watch world news. But loss is not the end of the story. God is, and He remains the great healer and restorer. He is the Father who runs, shouting, "We must celebrate, for what was once lost has now been found." He is the God who sees what's been lost and who cares. He is the God who is here and there and everywhere. He is the God who is with His people wherever we go. Pause. Well, I just want to say again, thank you so much for hanging out with me for this first episode of Digging in the Dirt. I look forward to future visits with you as we continue to go through the book Digging in the Dirt. And hopefully we'll kind of get to interact with some questions that come from you guys. So please reach out. Let me know what would be helpful for you in the season of life that you're in. And we will go from there. So God bless you. And as I used to wrap up every service when I was worship leader, I will say this: go with God.